We continue with Pulsifer v. United States, picking up on page 15. Part 3, Section A. And indeed, that inquiry into text and context makes paragraph F1's meaning clear. The paragraph creates an eligibility checklist. It specifies three necessary conditions for safety valve relief: that the defendant not have more than 4 criminal history points, not have a prior 3-point offense, and not have a prior 2-point violent offense. Reading the paragraph instead to set out a single condition, that the defendant not have the combination of the listed characteristics, would create 2 statutory difficulties. First, subparagraph A would become superfluous without any operative significance. That is because if a defendant has a 3-point offense under subparagraph B and a 2-point offense under subparagraph C, he will always have more than 4 criminal history points under subparagraph A. Second, defendant's eligibility for relief would not correspond to the seriousness of their criminal records. Instead, a defendant with numerous violent 3-point offenses could get relief because he happens not to have a 2-point offense. The content of subparagraphs A, B, and C, especially as read against the guidelines, thus answers the statutory puzzle here, reducing 2 grammatical possibilities to just 1 plausible construction. Begin with superfluity, or actually with its absence, because there is none under the government's reading. Each subparagraph does independent work, disqualifying defendants from relief even when the others would not. Subparagraph A disqualifies defendants who have more than 4 criminal history points, excluding those from a 1-point offense, even if they do not have a prior 3-point offense or a prior 2-point violent offense. So, for example, a defendant with 3 nonviolent 2-point offenses will be barred. Subparagraph B, in turn, disqualifies defendants who have any prior 3-point offense, even if they do not have a 2-point violent offense or more than 4 total points. And finally, subparagraph C disqualifies defendants who have a prior 2-point violent offense, even if they do not have a 3-point offense or more than 4 points. The paragraph thus excludes A, various repeat offenders, along with anyone having even a single conviction that B resulted in a sufficiently long prison sentence, or C resulted in a shorter sentence but involved violence. Every part of the paragraph has a function. But that is not so under Pulsifer's reading, as a bit of arithmetic reveals. Pulsifer's view, once again, is that paragraph F1 disqualifies only defendants with the combination of the characteristics in subparagraphs A, B, and C. So more than 4 criminal history points, a prior 3-point offense, and a prior 2-point violent one. But because 3 plus 2 equals 5, and because 5 is more than 4, a defendant with a 3-point offense and a 2-point violent offense will necessarily have more than 4 history points. So subparagraph A becomes meaningless. It does no independent work. Remove it from the statute, and what is left will make the exact same people eligible and ineligible for relief. And that kind of superfluity, in and of itself, refutes Pulsifer's reading. The problem here is no odd word or stray phrase which might have escaped Congress's notice. Pulsifer's reading would negate 1 of 3. Indeed, the first of 3 provisions in the paragraph he's trying to interpret. When a statutory construction thus renders an entire subparagraph meaningless, this court has noted, the canon against surplusage applies with special force. And still more when the subparagraph is so evidently designed to serve a concrete function. In addressing eligibility for sentencing relief, Congress specified three particular features of a defendant's criminal history, A, B, and C. It would not have done so if A had no possible effect. It would then have enacted B and C. But while that is the paragraph Pulsifer's reading produces, it is not the paragraph Congress wrote. To escape that quandary, Pulsifer contends that under the guidelines, a three-point offense and a two-point offense do not always total 5 criminal history points. The argument begins with a point not in dispute. Some prior convictions, as noted earlier, add 0 points to a defendant's criminal history score. That is true if the conviction is quite old, if it was rendered in a military, tribunal, or foreign court, or if it merged into another conviction because, for example, the two arose from the same charging instrument. The key move in Pulsifer's argument is the next one. He claims that a prior offense adding 0 points to a history score can still be a 3-point or 2-point offense under paragraph F1. That happens, he says, when the sentence given for the offense was long enough to otherwise add those points, meaning in the absence of the trait that reduced points to 0. Take an example. A very old conviction contributes 0 points to a defendant's history score, no matter how long the sentence. Still, Pulsifer contends it is a 3-point offense when the sentence given was sufficiently long, over 13 months, to add 3 points in a case not very old. And once that proposition is accepted, Pulsifer says, superfluity disappears. Suppose a defendant has, along with the old conviction just described, a newer 2-point violent offense. The old conviction, Pulsifer maintains, is a 3-point offense satisfying subparagraph B, and the new conviction satisfies subparagraph C. But the defendant has only 2 criminal history points, 0 from the old offense and 2 from the new, which is not enough to satisfy subparagraph A. So that subparagraph, Pulsifer concludes, has an effect. It keeps such a defendant eligible for safety valve relief. But Pulsifer's argument craters because its key move is wrong. Contrary to his view, there is no such thing under the guidelines as a 3-point or 2-point offense adding 0 points. Under subparagraphs B and C, the terms 3-point offense and 2-point violent offense are as determined under the sentencing guidelines, and the guidelines assign points to an offense only in the context and for the purpose of adding them to a defendant's criminal history total. So a conviction becomes a 3- or 2-point offense only when, only because, it adds 3 or 2 points to a total history score. Or said the other way around, only the addition of 3 or 2 points to that score makes the offense a 3 or 2-point offense. The corollary is that a conviction adding 0 points, because say it is very old, cannot be a 3 or 2-point offense. It is unsurprisingly a 0-point offense, whatever would be the case if the conviction were newer. For that reason, such a conviction cannot aid Pulsifer's effort to find a function for subparagraph A, because only the addition of 3 or 2 points can make an offense a 3 or 2-point offense. A defendant who has a prior 3-point offense and a prior 2-point violent offense will always have, arithmetic again, more than 4 points total. The guidelines mechanics thus foreclose Pulsifer's effort to erase the superfluity his reading creates. Yet more, Pulsifer's effort founders on the guidelines' judgments, reflected in paragraph F1, about which prior offenses warrant enhanced punishment. Consider what Pulsifer's 0-3 claim entails. Because an offense adding 0 points can, on his account, satisfy subparagraph B or C, it can help prevent a defendant from gaining safety valve relief. But that result ill comports with the guidelines. There are, after all, reasons why the guidelines decline to assign points to certain offenses. The specifics vary, but each embodies a judgment that some types of prior convictions should not have the usual weight in determining a current sentence. Maybe the prior conviction is not as reliable as most, or maybe it is not so good a measure of the defendant's future dangerousness. Whatever the precise explanation, the guidelines give 0 points to an offense in order to ensure that it not increase a later punishment. Except that under Pulsifer's view, it could do just that. Offenses that the guidelines deem irrelevant to future sentencing might end up triggering a mandatory minimum. And likewise, Pulsifer's view conflicts with a discrete feature of paragraph F1. Recall that under that paragraph, an offense earning 1 point cannot affect eligibility for relief, either alone or in combination with any other offense, presumably because a 1-point offense is just too minor. Yet Pulsifer's theory would allow an offense adding 0 points to contribute to a finding that relief is barred. That claim is, again, too out of sync with the statutory framework to offer an escape from his 3+2=5 superfluity problem. And beyond that problem lies a second, this one relating to the way paragraph F1 precludes safety valve relief for defendants with serious criminal histories. The paragraph operates as a gatekeeper. It helps get some defendants into and keeps other defendants out of a world free of mandatory minimums, and the criteria for selection, evident on the paragraph's face, relate to just how bad a defendant's criminal record is. Pulsifer himself recognizes that fact. In describing paragraph F1, he notes that subparagraph A targets recidivism, that subparagraph B targets serious offenses leading to lengthy prison terms, and that subparagraph C targets violent offenses, even though resulting in lesser sentences. The paragraph thus focuses on the kinds of past criminal behavior that, under the guidelines, trigger enhanced penalties. Over and over, the guidelines presume that defendants with worse criminal records, exhibiting recidivism, lengthy sentences, and violence, are deserving of greater punishment. Paragraph F1, in line with its repeated invocation of the guidelines, expresses the same understanding. Put simply, the paragraph sorts defendants for relief or not based on the seriousness of their criminal history. Under the government's reading, paragraph F1 performs that function without a hitch. When the defendant has committed multiple non-minor offenses, he cannot get relief. And so too when he has committed even a single offense punished with a lengthy prison sentence or involving violence. Only a defendant with none of those markers, a defendant who can check off every one of the three, does not have requirements, is eligible for relief. So the paragraph unerringly separates more serious prior offenders from less serious ones, allowing only the latter through the gate. That does not happen under Pulsifer's construction. To the contrary, his reading would allow relief to defendants with more serious records while barring relief to defendants with less serious ones. Or said otherwise, the sorting accomplished by Pulsifer's reading does not match what paragraph F1 and the guidelines call for. Consider two hypothetical defendants. One has 5 criminal history points from a prior 3-point offense and a prior 2-point violent offense. The other has 15 criminal history points from 5 prior 3-point offenses, every last one of a violent nature, but has no 2-point violent offenses. Which of the two defendants is the more serious prior offender? The latter, of course. His record exhibits greater recidivism, lengthier sentences, and more violence. But under Pulsiver's view of paragraph F1, which of the two defendants is excluded from relief? The former alone. For want of a 2-point offense, the latter remains eligible to avoid a mandatory minimum. The paragraph thus fails to divide, at the gate for safety valve relief, more from less serious prior offenders. And contrary to Pulsiver's view, that problem cannot be solved by resort to a sentencing judge's discretion. Notably, Pulsiver does not argue that there is any rhyme or reason to making our serial 3-point violent offender eligible for safety valve relief. He says only that Congress had no reason to be concerned about that outcome because it knew that a sentencing court would still have discretion to impose a proportionate sentence. But that trust in discretion claim cannot work here. If Congress thought it could always rely on sentencing discretion, it would not have created a criminal history requirement in the first instance. That requirement, by its terms, confines such discretion. More specifically, it allows discretion to operate only when a defendant's record does not reach a certain level of seriousness. On the government's reading, the paragraph well performs that gatekeeping function, separating more serious from less serious criminal histories. On Pulsiver's reading, the paragraph does not. As just shown, it allows and denies relief in ways that do not correspond to the gravity of what the defendant has previously done. The need for a judge to correct those results, which Pulsiver admits, shows that his reading is wrong. Once again, his construction of paragraph F1, however grammatical, makes a hash of the scheme Congress devised. Section B. Pulsiver tries to tell a competing story, which the dissent mostly adopts. Even supposing the grammar of paragraph F1 is a wash, Pulsiver contends that statutory context supports his view of what that provision means by and. His argument invokes the presumption of consistent usage and the meaningful variation canon. Those are the terms often given to a generally useful but still defeasible interpretive principle. In a given statute, the same term usually has the same meaning, and different terms usually have different meanings. The principle is mostly applied to terms with some heft and distinctiveness, whose use drafters are likely to keep track of and standardize. Pulsiver breaks new ground in applying the principle to words as ubiquitous and sometimes context-dependent as and, or. He argues more specifically that another and plus an or in section 3553F show that the and in paragraph F1 must be read in this way. But even accepting that a court can sometimes demand harmonization of ands and ors, Pulsiver's argument fails. Take the other and first. As noted earlier, the criminal history requirement is only one of 5 conditions for safety valve relief set out in section 3553F. Those conditions appear in a list. Paragraphs F1 through F5, with an and linking them, just as an and links paragraph F1's three subparagraphs. A look at the appendix may be helpful here. The stylized version of the list in section 3553F goes as follows. The safety valve operates if the court finds 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. The problem for Pulsifer is that the meaning of the and in section 3553F does not advance his reading of paragraph F1. Everyone, including Pulsifer, agrees that the and in section 3553F connects five requirements for safety valve relief, all of which a defendant must meet. In Pulsifer's view, the government has to read paragraph F1's and differently to make each one of its subparagraphs disqualifying. But that is just wrong. The and in section 3553F works identically to the and in the government's reading of paragraph F1. Section 3553F's and creates an eligibility checklist. A defendant fulfills that provision's requirements if the court finds 1, finds 2, finds 3, finds 4, and finally finds 5. So the and joins five individually necessary conditions for relief. Likewise, the and in the government's construction of paragraph F1 creates an eligibility checklist. A defendant satisfies that paragraph's requirements if he does not have A, does not have B, and finally does not have C. So again, the and joins several individually necessary conditions for safety valve relief. Everything is consistent in meaning and operation alike. It is actually Pulsifer who introduces dissonance into the provision. As to the larger list, he acknowledges that a defendant cannot get relief without checking off 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 individually. But as to the smaller list, Pulsifer changes the rule. Now a defendant need not satisfy A, B, and C individually. Instead, he can get relief so long as he does not have A, B, and C combined. In other words, in Pulsifer's world, section 3553F is an eligibility checklist, but paragraph F1 is not. Pulsifer's deployment of another paragraph's or fares no better. Section 3553F4 conditions safety valve relief on a finding that the defendant was not an organizer, leader, manager, or supervisor of others in the offense. Congress thus used an or to signify that being any one of those things is disqualifying. Invoking the meaningful variation canon, Pulsifer argues that the different term and in paragraph F1 must mean the opposite, that only the combination of the listed things disqualifies a defendant. Recall that we have already rejected Pulsifer's unadorned view that the word or is needed to convey the government's reading of paragraph F1. Pulsifer's additional reference to paragraph F4's or does not strengthen his case. As we have shown throughout this opinion, conjunctions are versatile words, which can work differently depending on context. Here is yet another example. As another glance at the appendix will confirm, the relevant clause in paragraph F4 is markedly different in length and formatting from the material in paragraph F1. Naturally leading to different choices respecting the use of conjunctions. And anyway, Congress drafted the current versions of the paragraphs at different times. Paragraph F4 in 1994, paragraph F1 in 2018. It would hardly be surprising if 24 years later, Paragraph F1's drafters did not perfectly harmonize their conjunction usage with a dissimilar-looking nearby paragraph. There can be few better illustrations of the defeasibility of the meaningful variation canon. Finally, Pulsifer and the dissent make a misguided argument about legislative purpose. As noted earlier, Congress enacted the revised version of paragraph F1 as part of the First Step Act, a significant sentencing reform law. Pulsifer explains that the new provision was meant to make safety valve relief more widely available. And the dissent highlights how many more defendants would get safety valve relief under Pulsifer's reading than under the government's. We do not doubt the points, but they do not assist in interpreting the statutory text before us. Both views of the paragraph, Pulsifer's and the government's, significantly widen the opportunity for safety valve relief. Recall that under the prior provision, anything more than a single criminal history point precluded deviation from a mandatory minimum. And Pulsifer's interpretation is not better just because it would go further than the government's. No law pursues its purposes at all costs. So here, Congress did not eliminate but only curtailed mandatory minimums, did not extend safety valve relief to all defendants, but only to some. And to determine the exact contours of that class, we can do no better than examine paragraph F1's text in context. For all the reasons given, that scrutiny reveals that Pulsifer's view goes too far. Part 4. Yet Pulsifer, joined again by the dissent, asserts we are not done. At the least, he claims, the meaning of the criminal history requirement is uncertain, and because it is uncertain, he must win. The rule of lenity, he says, requires courts to read ambiguous criminal statutes in favor of liberty. The problem is that we do not view paragraph F1 as genuinely ambiguous. There are, to be sure, two grammatically permissible readings of the statute when viewed in the abstract. It may be read Pulsifer's way as stating that a defendant can get safety valve relief so long as he does not have the combination A, B, and C, or it may be read the government's way, as stating that a defendant can get safety valve relief only if he does not have A, does not have B, and does not have C. But the difficulty in choosing between those two constructions falls away once we consider the content of subparagraphs A, B, and C. More than 4 criminal history points, excluding points from a 1-point offense, a prior 3-point offense, and a prior 2-point violent offense, all as determined under the sentencing guidelines. Then we discover that Pulsifer's view creates glaring superfluity, whereas the government's view does not. And we discover that only the government's view renders the provision capable of sorting more serious from less serious criminal records, consistent with both the statutes and the guidelines' designs. The 2 possible readings thus reduce to 1, leaving no role for lenity to play. In sum, paragraph F1's criminal history requirement sets out an eligibility checklist. A defendant is eligible for safety valve relief only if he satisfies each of the paragraph's 3 conditions. He cannot have more than 4 criminal history points. He cannot have a prior 3-point offense. And he cannot have a prior 2-point violent offense. Because Pulsifer has 2 prior 3-point offenses totaling 6 points, he is not eligible. It makes no difference that he does not also have a prior 2-point violent offense. Accordingly, we affirm the judgment of the Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit. It is so ordered. We've come to the end of this opinion. Until next episode, thanks for listening to What SCOTUS Wrote Us.